This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, Hal, do visions have feet?
Shh. How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Making Biblical Family Life Practical. I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
And we are going to be talking today with our friend David Vogel of Living the Answer. David is a talented young man. He's an excellent teacher. He teaches on Christian worldview. He teaches on U.S. history. And he also teaches classes on writing, not just creative writing, but persuasive writing, the important kind of writing that I think we as Christians need to be involved with.
Well, you know, the thing about writing, if I just talk to the people I know, I can influence a couple of dozen people. If I'm willing to speak in public, you know, I can influence hundreds. If I write, I can influence generations unborn.
Mm. And you can speak even though you're dead.
That's right.
Okay. And so writing is a really important thing. And we wanted to talk with David about this, not just the process of teaching writing, but the importance of it. So, David, we want to welcome you back.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Now, David, let's start with there. What would you say is a Christian rationale for being intentional about teaching writing?
Well, I think there's many Christian reasons to teach writing. One of them is simply the model that God gives us in sending written revelation to us, that language is important to God himself. Making it a little bit more a little more personal and practical. As your wife was saying, there's the fact that language lives on, that what we write can reach people in a way that really no other form of communication does. But maybe, you know, the person sitting at home is going, yeah, but I know my child. You know, my child is not going to write the next great theological work. And maybe so, maybe not. Maybe they'll surprise you. But even if we're not going to write, you know, the next wonderful theological work that's going to change lives, writing is so important for the child for so many different reasons. In fact, I would urge it really should be our, aside from the things that the child has a particular passion and interest in, putting those aside, I would urge that writing should be the number one academic priority. It should be really what we focus on the most. Because if you can write well, remember, writing is not just putting words on paper. That's part of it. But it's thinking. It's the thinking field, the understanding of looking at a subject, analyzing it, considering it deeply, considering it from both sides, trying to sort of get inside of it, then having to organize those ideas, and then finally having to communicate them in a way that makes sense to and persuades other people and hopefully is even beautiful. You know, it's hard to imagine a more perfect package for so many of the skills that we need as individuals, that we need academically, even that we need professionally in many different professions. So it's incredibly important for all those reasons.
You know, this is something we probably need to say up front, because I think a lot of us get this confused in the laziness of our thinking. A lot of us are not very analytical, as I'm sure you find. But to recognize that there's a difference between the mechanics of pushing a pencil across the paper or of using a keyboard to make words appear on the screen, that's different than the composition of the thoughts.
You know, I think that's so important because a lot of boys struggle with penmanship until they're approaching high school age. And I think parents think that in order to teach writing, the child has got to use penmanship. And I think that that's a mistake, because I think it hampers the creativity and the writing process if the child's limited in their small motor skills to tie the composition process to their small motor skills. I think it's a mistake. You know, I know with our younger guys, I encourage them to dictate to me when we're teaching composition, because I want to teach them the art of composition without the distraction of the difficulty of the penmanship. Because, you know, we've written several books. I've never written one word of them by hand.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. That we often, as you were saying, we sort of intimidate our children away from writing by making it too many skills at once.
Yes.
Honestly, I think we also see at an older level, which is where I teach most of my classes, you know, middle school level, high school level, and you'll see, you mentioned, you know, boys at that higher level, very often we ask the boy, you know, write about how you feel, you know, about this or that. And that's just not as natural for a boy. In fact, literally, if you look at the boy's brain, how it's put together, the physical connections between the feeling part of his brain and the communicating part of his brain are just not there as much as they often are for a female at that age. So we ask all these things at a younger age, penmanship, at an older age, how do you feel? And the poor kid feels like, my goodness, I can't wrap my mind around this process. When, as you said, you know, just dictate at a younger age, or just what I'll do in essay classes often, is before we put pen to paper at all, you sit down and talk about it.
Yeah.
Because you turn to the kid and say, okay, what do you actually think? What is your opinion about this topic? That's your thesis. And then, well, why? And now you've got your main point for the essay. And they very often can express themselves better in words, because that's more natural. They're more practiced in that. And then worry about the mechanics of putting it on the paper, which is important too. But it's, let's not just dump it all on the poor child all at once, because that really can be overwhelming.
Yeah, I think you hit some very important things there. Like you said, we tend to say, because I think most writing curricula are written by women, we say, how do you feel about this? And the prompts are about feelings and likes and dislikes. And I know, I told my mother last night, I said, you know, it's a shame so many people only have one or two children, because by the time you're beginning to figure it out, you're done. You know, I feel like we've learned so much about raising boys just because the Lord made us by giving us six boys in a row. And after a while, I realized, you know what? I say prompts like that, and their eyes go glassy. They get panicked. You know, whereas if I say, okay, let's debate this issue. Boys love to debate. You know, let's look
exactly
at two sides of this issue. They're on it. And so, yeah, the topic, the prompt that we give them makes a huge difference in how well they deal with the writing process.
I like what David's saying here about focusing, you know, like we're talking about, not focusing on the mechanics of how you make words appear on paper, and not making it a grammar exercise.
Yes.
But the thought process, because if you look at the Gospels, Jesus obviously was literate. There's records of times when Jesus wrote. Okay, so he knew how to write, and he demonstrated that in his human time here. But that is not the focus of his ministry, and yet, you know, he spoke with great eloquence. He put very profound things together to communicate using language. And that really, you know, when we talk about writing, teaching writing as a skill, especially at this higher level like David's talking about, that's really what we're focusing on, is getting your ideas organized and communicating them in a persuasive, logical fashion.
You know, I never dreamed I would become a writer, because I remember in the ninth grade sitting there, we had to write in a journal every day, and it was torture to me, because the teacher said, you know, just write about anything. And I would look at that page and I just thought, what in the world am I going to put down? And if someone had told me then that I would be a professional writer, I would have laughed in their faces. But like you said, if we instead sit down with our children, like our children just finished doing their essays for the Tar Heel Junior Historians essay contest. And with each child, I sat down and said, okay, well, here's the prompt. What position are you going to take? You know, and talk about, okay, well, why, like you said. And then for each why, come up with two or three bits of evidence. And by the time we talked about it, the writing was easy because they thought it all through. And, you know, I think we, like you said, we're trying to teach too many skills at once. If we instead take it step by step, get something down, once the essay is down, then editing it becomes much easier. And I know when I was in high school, I tried to do it all at once. I didn't want to do rough drafts. I didn't want to edit. I just wanted to get it out there because it seemed so painful. And yeah, I think we need to break it down into doable bites.
Yeah, and I think a couple of things that stand out to me in what you said. First of all, yeah, that blank sheet, just put down what you're feeling. For some students, that can work. But for most students, that's terrifying. And we really need to give them more specific, you know, as you said, here's your prompt, what do you think about it, and help them walk through. And I think it's very interesting, personally, when I teach essays, I use the framework that we get from classical rhetoric of the three canons of writing. There's actually five canons of rhetoric, but they were concerned with speaking as well. The two of those canons are related to memory and delivery. But then you have these three elements of rhetoric that the great Greek and Roman communicators, they said these are the essential elements of communication. You need invention, which is basically, or discovery, I almost prefer that term, discovery, is coming up with ideas. What am I going to talk about? Then organization or arrangement, how am I going to put them together? And then finally, you have style or elocution, which is how do I present them well? But notice that's just one third of the process. And you've got to start by gathering those ideas, organizing those ideas together. And if we can help the child with that, and so much of that, again, can be done by, you know, sitting down and talking with them is often more comfortable at first. Then we go ahead and put it into written form. And, you know, the beautiful thing, of course, is once I learn in that slower, more disciplined way to organize my ideas and put them into writing, that cycles right back. And now it helps me when I'm communicating spoken form with my family, with my friends, in class or whatever. Now I've learned those skills of organization, of developing ideas. And so talking in order to write then can come back, and those skills help me to talk better too. And it just becomes a reinforcing thing as I become a more complete human, frankly, more able to think and reason and articulate and communicate.
Wow. So now let me ask this. We are living in such a fast-paced digital world, 140 characters in a tweet, where how whatever the limit is for a Facebook post. You know, there's so much that's pushing us culturally to say, give me a soundbite in words. Give me a short eruption from your thoughts and feelings right now, and let that be profound enough. Do you find that we're struggling against that, or do you see that there may be something useful in that sort of limited discipline as well?
Well, I would say, first of all, the person who has learned to think can actually do a short 140 character eruption better than the person who has not learned to think. So I think, yes. Personally, I make a point of abstaining from Twitter. I just feel like it's the form too much undermines the communication. But I do think that even this type of, you know, soundbite communication, if you know how to think, you can even do that better. But I do think that we really need to encourage our children to discipline themselves to be able to think better, to think longer. And honestly, I think a lot of that goes back to it. We talked about this last week when I was with you guys, but that, you know, communication within the family, talking around the dinner table, that sort of thing, where, again, those why questions. So what do you think about this? Why do you think that? I encourage them to read aloud to them. I've got to say, honestly, one of the things that you can best prepare your child to do to do well on the SAT essay or on AP essays, read aloud to them when they're six, and just teach them that love of ideas and of words. And that'll grow and give them something positive to hold on to, that even if, yes, they get a Twitter account, even if they start texting, heaven forbid, even if they don't use good grammar in their text, they'll still have, you know, that positive love of good communication that you instilled in them from an early age that can help them to balance that soundbite culture they're in.
Well, you know, one of the things that we tell parents of boys particularly is that their main job before high school is to preserve the love of learning in their boys, because boys really come into their own academically in high school. And yet most boys have had their love of learning squashed completely by that point, and their academic confidence squashed completely. And, you know, I think reading aloud, reading good books and challenging books, you know, even something exciting like J. Henney that has complex sentences and complex paragraphs and challenging vocabulary can make a huge difference in their love of learning. And then with our boys, I know in high school, I've been pretty much able to take my hands off, and they run with their education because they love to learn. And now their brains are catching up to the, to their desires.
Wow.
And I think another thing that we can really do to, for boys in particular, but just all students, is something that I see with writing in particular. We so often teach inexplicable rules. You know, do this, have this many LY words. You know, this is the 3-point formula you need to do for an introduction paragraph. And there's a reason behind the rule. But it really does help, even at a surprisingly young age, where we think, you know, oh, they just need to memorize the form or whatever. Just a little bit of talking about, okay, why are we doing this? You know, why is it helpful to have a hook, or if you want to use the classical rhetoric term, the exordium or whatever, the thing that catches your attention at the beginning of the introduction? Why do we do it? You know, why do we then give background information in the introduction, that sort of thing? Because what I see often when kids get to my essay class is they feel like writing's magic. Writing this arbitrary set of rules that's weird, they don't understand it, and it's demoralizing because we're made to communicate. And if you feel like communication and writing are two separate things, you've just gutted the heart out of writing. And trying to get them to understand that fundamentally what you're doing is you're communicating. Mm-hmm. And we're just helping you to do it well. We're giving you the, you know, the grammar of it. We're giving you the structure of it. We're giving you the way to organize it. But you're communicating. Everybody wants to communicate. Everybody wants to be heard. And you almost have to, you almost have to intentionally squash it and kill it to take that away, though it's so easy to do.
Oh, it's so easy. We need to take a short break, Hal. Mm-hmm. We're halfway into the show.
Yes.
I, you know, some of you are probably thinking, writing? Really? I can't get my child to even do math. It takes 3 hours to do math. I want to encourage you. There is a time, usually in the preteen or early teen years, when children go through a tremendous hormonal change. And that hormonal change makes them very emotionally challenging. They're on an emotional roller coaster, and they're inviting you to join them there. They have tremendous intellectual changes, which make them addled for a time. They get distracted. School takes forever. You know what? There are answers. You can get through this time period. If you're in that, or you're thinking, you're seeing signs of that, let me invite you to join us for Boot Camp 9 to 12. It's a webinar series for parents of preteen and early teen boys, where we talk about all these challenges and how to get through them in a godly way so that the teen years can be a blessing. And so check it out at raisingrealmen.com/bootcamp. You know what? I think it'll make a tremendous difference to your family and to your son.
I think so, too. Well, if you're just joining us, this is Making Biblical Family Life Practical. We're talking with David Vogel of Living the Answer. He is a talented teacher of many subjects, but one of them is the written word. And, David, do you also do debate and rhetoric public speaking classes? I know that at one time you were involved with a different ministry doing that. Are you still doing that with Living the Answer?
I have. I still teach some. I've taught various styles of Lincoln Douglas debate, teen policy debate, but, you know, just straight up public speaking. A lot of it through NCSDA, a great, great homeschool speech and debate league. So I've done that in the past. Not so much right now today. I've sort of stepped back a little bit from teaching debate specifically, just mm-hmm. as a matter of time commitment. But I do think, going back to what we were saying, before our break here, just the real interconnection between writing and any sort of persuasive speaking as well, that if your child struggles with writing, getting them involved, some students getting involved in debate or persuasive speaking can really help them with the writing, because it breaks through that barrier of, I just don't know what to say, and it may be easier to get started verbally.
You know, David, one of our sons took an essay class from you. And as a writer, I was very interested in how you taught it and how it was going to turn out. I was really impressed that you worked toward not just getting them to write anything, but to write well. Because I read so much these days that is just so poorly written. We've kind of got several different things here that we've got going on. Mm-hmm. We've got to get kids writing. And I think many parents struggle with just getting them to get things on paper.
And, but, and- And let me say this as an encouragement and maybe a challenge. I trained as an engineer, okay, science, technology, math. But I've always loved reading, and I've wanted to communicate. So I learned to write, and you know, now I am a professional writer. But the interesting thing was, even in my engineering career, the ability to communicate verbally and clearly to a non-technical person, when I could take a complex technical issue and explain it to a manager, a human resource officer, to a factory worker, that made me much more valuable as the technical person.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes when you're teaching kids, they say, you know what, I want to be a scientist. Why do I need to study literature? And the answer is, you know what, you're going to be so much more powerful as a scientist or a technician or a mathematician or whatever if you can take those concepts you love and explain them to the average person.
Well, you know, for one thing, they've got to write a grant proposal and get some money to do that science.
Wow.
And if they can write a good grant proposal, they're going to be a much more effective scientist. But, you know, in the short term, we've sent 3 children on to college so far. And what I have found is that the gatekeeper for getting scholarships is essays. Because that, you know, you can't tell much from a transcript and test scores. You can tell sort of the ability, sort of the background, but that tells them nothing about your personality and who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the essay that you write when you apply to college is really your introduction to the admissions committee. And then usually, if you're applying for scholarships, there were further essays for scholarship committees, and you didn't actually see the scholarship committee until you had made it already to the finalists.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if for nothing else, if you want your children to go to college and you don't want to pay for it all yourself, teaching them to write good essays is critical.
And I think also, as we've been saying, you know, even if my kid's interested in science, yes, absolutely, I need to be able to communicate with, you know, all the way up the school ladder, communicating scholarships, communicating with my professors, you know, communicating with then the people I'm applying for work with, communicating with my fellow employees. But even more fundamentally than that, again, if we think of writing as a discipline, not just of putting words on paper, but of thinking, you know, I would really strongly argue that those sort of analytical abilities and the really having to dig in and see a subject for what it is, to consider your opinion of it, to present that opinion in a way that other people can understand, that's something that's useful whether you're an engineer or a scientist. I don't care if you're looking at a frog, it's so helpful to be able to really think about what that frog is and communicate about it in a way that writing teaches you.
I think, too, that understanding writing and the allied arts, if you will, things about being able to read literature and understand it and interpret literature, to me, that strengthens my ability to understand the scriptures and to explain the scriptures to my family. You know, I've met teachers who are real students of the word, and if you will, they're good theological technicians, but they struggle with communicating to an audience that's not as oriented, you know, brainily as they are. They have a struggle teaching a mixed group in a church to teach to the children, to teach to the non-analytical adults, you know, to try to get through the barriers. And I think this whole process of teaching you to think about how do I communicate, which involves not only how do I get my own thoughts together, but how do I sort of see into the minds of the person that's going to read this?
How do I consider my audience?
Mm-hmm.
You know, David, let's just talk for a minute about some of the different aspects of writing that parents need to consider when they're teaching, things like considering your audience. Can you share with us about that? What should parents be thinking about as they're talking about writing to their children?
Well, I mean, obviously, as you said, considering the audience is important. I do think that, you know, in general, the biggest priority for, you know, the parent thinking, how can I help my child to write well? I guess a few things. One, it really does help. You know, we've said grammar isn't the be-all and end-all, but for a lot of students, feeling like, I don't know how basic grammar works can really hold you back if you don't know the fundamentals. So make sure that child does have a decent understanding of grammar. And make sure you have a decent understanding of grammar so that you can get those basics out of the way and they feel confident writing. And then you as a parent feel confident grading and saying, okay, this was mistaken, because grammar is pretty objective. It's either right or it's wrong. Another thing that really is valuable is to just encourage that child to think of the writing as, does this make sense? You know, it's helpful to you as the parent and to the child, because again, we make writing so mysterious. Fundamentally, it is communication. All the trappings that come along with it of grammar and organization and style and all that are to make sense, are to communicate ideas. So if we can encourage that child to make it less mysterious and just say, look, this is what you think. And then, why do you think it? Would somebody who doesn't understand the subject, if they came along and if they read what you've presented, would they understand it? And would they be persuaded to your perspective? And if we can just keep coming back to that fundamental, focus, I think it really, really helps both the child to have more confidence and more interest. It also helps the parent, because that can give us a better sense. You know how to, you know, you listen to a presidential debate on TV, you listen to your kids arguing, and you can say that makes sense or it doesn't. And that's just a really helpful basic criteria that covers a lot of the essence of writing.
You know, two things you mentioned there I wanted to comment on. The first is grammar. I think the best thing you can do for your children's writing grammar-wise is to force yourself to speak with proper grammar. Because, you know, my mother was murder on bad grammar. If we used bad grammar, she'd shoot us out. And I thought it was really silly. But when I became an adult, I realized, or even in high school, I realized that things that were very easy for me, like on the SAT, were very hard for my friends because I had not used that bad grammar. And to me, good grammar sounded right. And I think when we strive to use good grammar in front of our children when we speak, that gives them a sense of what sounds right grammar-wise. The other thing you were talking about, does it make sense? One of the things we've done is read aloud what our children have written to them, just as they've written it. Because, again, we have a higher level of understanding orally and hearing things. And so when they hear it, they say, hang on, that doesn't sound right. That doesn't make any sense. Whereas when they're reading it, they can miss that.
You know, and let me add to this, too. You know, on a couple of occasions, I know that the writing that we've done for some of our books, I record the audiobook version. And I have found in the process of reading out loud what we've written, things will not ring properly in the ear. And I'll say, that's not clearly stated, or else it could be stated a lot more persuasively or a lot more pleasingly. But, you know, how many times had I read that, writing it and rewriting it,
hundreds
first reading
times,
it,
probably, yeah.
But it wasn't until I heard it that I said, oh, wait a minute, that doesn't flow right.
Yeah.
And so that's a good exercise too, you know, especially if you're working on a piece of a limited duration, you know, a 5-paragraph essay or something, to say, hey, read this back. Even if you just read it out loud to yourself.
It makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
I think it really does. We're naturally made to learn grammar through hearing. I mean, that's how for millennia, mm-hmm. people have learned the grammar of their language just by picking it up auditorily. And we just hear so much more than we read. So that makes good sense. And I think also we can, you know, going back to what we were saying about the soundbite culture, you know, Twitter and texts and things like that. I know that I have to discipline myself when I'm writing a text or a Facebook post or whatever. I do try to make, you know, use good grammar. And I think, you know, the parent can go too far. Don't make your child miserable by policing every Facebook post for grammar. But I think if you explain to the child, you know, just try and use basic good grammar in your emails, in your texts, and whatever. Every sentence you write, you're teaching yourself good grammar or bad grammar. You learn from your own practice that you're doing. And if we can just help them to understand that, that could help them, as you said, get that natural feel.
You know, we say that we live in a classless society in the United States, but it's not true. And one of the things people judge your class on is, do you speak with proper grammar and do you have good table manners? And we've seen when Hal had interviews for upper level positions when he was in the corporate world, they always take you out to eat. you know, and they always have several people talk to you. And people don't even realize that they're cutting themselves. We did interviews of other mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. People don't realize that they're cutting themselves out of potential job promotions because they don't fit. People say, oh, you know, his grammar, he just doesn't sound professional. You know, he's a sloppy eater. You know, those things really make a difference to your career. And I think most people don't realize it.
Yeah. And I think, too, and we sometimes we in our region of the country feel a bit defensive because, you know, some, you know, the media likes to make fun of a Southern accent. But you realize if you, even if you read, you know, older literature that's well written, you realize that the fact that you come from the South and that your pronunciation is a little softer than in the Midwest or New England or something, that doesn't necessarily mark you as uneducated or ignorant, but you do have to have the fundamentals in place. And you do have to know how to properly use a word.
Yeah.
And not, you don't have to be ashamed of your heritage, but you're not showing some sort of cultural loyalty to speak badly.
Right.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, you know, as we travel around, we found the fact that we still have, although I think we do speak very well, to be honest. I mean, I think our grammar is pretty correct, yet, people appreciate the regional difference they hear in our voices. And we find that audiences are very responsive on the West Coast and the Rocky Mountain region because we don't sound like their neighbors. And so that's not a thing to be ashamed of, but it doesn't prevent you from speaking correctly.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, David, we are out of time, but we have really enjoyed talking to you about writing today. I want to say something before we go. David teaches classes on the internet. Mm-hmm. And we have found them very profitable for our children. His essay writing class was excellent. It really took our son from feeling very insecure about his writing to feeling good about it and understanding it. David goes beyond the basic of here's how you do a 5-paragraph essay. You know, you can teach that in 15 minutes to teaching them how to use different techniques to write well, not to overuse words, mm-hmm. how to put together an essay in a way that is excellent. And I really appreciate that. Felt like Samuel learned a lot from you, David. David, can you tell people how to get to your website?
Well, very simple. Just head to livingtheanswer.org, livingtheanswer.org, and all the classes are listed there, and I'd love to answer any questions people had by email as well.
Great. And we need to talk a little bit about our upcoming schedule.
Okay.
Now this is being recorded, so we're looking forward to when we actually broadcast it and need to talk about the month of May, our calendar coming up there.
Oh, that's going to be a busy month.
That's going to be busy because May 14th through 16th, we're going to be in Springfield, Missouri. We're speaking at the conference sponsored by the Southwest Home Educators Ministries, or SHEM. And that's going to be a good event. We were there a few years ago and thoroughly enjoyed it. We're going to be the 21st through the 23rd of May. We're going to be at the North Carolinians for Home Education Conference in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And right on the heels of that, we'll be at Cedar Point Resort in Sandusky, Ohio for Teach Them Diligently. And that's going to be the 28th through the 30th of May. So if you are out and around and looking at homeschool conventions in the month of May, we're going to be at 3 of them. We'd love to see you.
And in June, Virginia and Oregon. So we're going to be all over the country. We're looking forward to seeing you. Please stop by our booth and introduce yourselves. We love to hear people are listening to the broadcast.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, we want to thank you for spending some time with us. We've been talking about taking biblical principles into the 21st century family. And our special guest, David Vogel of Living the Answer. Thank you for being with us, David, so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And we hope you'll join us again every Monday night at 9 p.m. Or you can catch us on iTunes or check the archives. Go to halandmelanie.com/radio and you can find everything linked there. Until next time, I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
Thanks, and God bless you for listening.
See you later, folks.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HALANDMELANIE.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/Hal and Melanie or Facebook.com/Raising Real Men. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.